Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, March 19, 2026. On the front page of the News Gazette is a group of photos with the headline, Fit Check. Illini staff try to spread out teams' usage of various union uniform options with no superstitions involved. Kylan Boswell has been listening to Careless Whisperer as part of his pre-game ritual, but superstition doesn't extend to how the Illinois men's basketball team selects its uniforms or game day equipment. We just try to spread them out and try to wear all of them, Director of Operations Joey Biggs said. All of them, they kind of try to wear an even amount this year. Probably wore the navy ones and the new orange script a little more, but usually we try to kind of space them out. Boswell doesn't have any other superstitions, but does share the same favorite uniform as Brandon Lee, Jake Davis, A.J. Redd, and Andrej Stojkovic. Honestly, I think the dark blue has been my favorite this year, Boswell said. Illinois' orange and blue practice digs were on display Wednesday at Bon Secours Wellness Arena, where the third-seeded Illini are set to face 14th-seeded Penn in the opening round of the NCAA tournament on Thursday night. Tariq Cotton and Illinois managers went to work getting things ready as soon as the Illini received their bid toward the end of CBS's selection show on March 15th. We knew we had to start packing our personal luggage, but also on Tuesday morning before we left, we had to also make sure that we had all of our players' things in a row, Cotton said. So it definitely can be stressful, but the biggest thing is just having a checklist and making sure you don't forget anything. Their work hasn't gone unnoticed during a season in which the Illini have collected 24 wins thus far. A.J. Redd, who spent the first semester of his time at Illinois as a student manager before becoming a walk-on during the 22-23 season, has plenty of close friends in that group, including roommate Landon Redfern. I've got a good relationship with all the guys, and they make coming into the gym every day very fun, and we hang out with them a lot outside the court, too, Redd said. Illinois has worn 6 uniforms during the 25-26 season. The Illini are a combined 6-1 in their 2 uniforms, featuring the Illinois wordmark that was unveiled in 2014, with the lone loss coming in the white uniform against Wisconsin on February 10th. Illinois is 2-0 in its modern take on an orange uniform, though those haven't been worn since an 87-73 win against UT Rio Grande Valley on November 24th. But 25 of Illinois' games have featured its 4 uniforms that are inspired by its past looks. The trend 10 years ago was redesign the uniforms, do something different, Big said. And now if you look, and the NBA kind of started it, and we've kind of fallen in line, they kind of go to retro, and then that's what they stay with, because that's what the fans love, and that's what you can sell. Illinois is a combined 8-2 in its orange and navy uniforms that feature a similar design to the program's Flying Illini team. A white uniform with Illinois across the chest in script lettering is Illinois' most successful kit thus far this season, with a 6-3 ledger, white and orange version on the script uniform is 4-2 in its debut season. That was something that was fun, and those guys like it. The fan base likes it, Biggs said, of introducing the new uniforms. And it also keeps things fresh, and you try to incorporate one or two every couple years. And I think we want to get some that we can keep for a while. The script white jersey, a nod to teams of the late 1970s that was introduced in 2019, is the only one to see more than 2 losses this season, with an overtime setback against Nebraska and Champaign and losses to Alabama and Wisconsin at United Center. It's also the jersey that Ben Hummerkaus would consider his favorite. I always feel best putting it on, Hummerkaus said. You know, ready to go. It's kind of like one of those feel-good, play-good kind of deals. Keaton Wagler scored 46 points against Purdue on January 24th, wearing his favorite uniform, the orange counterpart of the script whites. Not that he'll pass up a chance to wear the white version. My shoes usually match good with those uniforms, Wagler said. Accessories vary even more than the array of uniforms Illinois employs. Tokoyevich, for instance, doesn't have a shortage of shoes to choose from. I've tried to be consistent with the model, wearing mostly Kobe 6s and Devin Booker's Nike shoe through the year, Stokoyevich said. That also has something to do with a foot aligning injury, but I've been trying to mix it up. I haven't been trying to go too crazy with the colors. I've got some that I haven't pulled out that I've been thinking about pulling out. I think it's cool that every guy on this team has something different to show. But the players who will don the script white uniforms against Penn don't have to put much thought into the main part of the uniform. I think all the jerseys are nice, Davis said. I don't know our win-loss record for any of them, but I imagine it's something interesting. We have no say, but I like our jerseys. There's another photo on the front page with the caption, Tesserione Jones gets help from daughter Amia Sanchez in cutting the ribbon on the front door of her family's new Habitat for Humanity's house Wednesday on Hill Street in Champaign. Sweat and tears invested into new home. When Tesserione Jones started working to build her first house, she had no experience in construction at all. No way, I don't even know how to use a hammer, she said. But there she was, standing outside of the home she and her three kids are on the verge of moving into. Jones has been part of the Habitat for Humanity program involving volunteers, staff, donors, and the families themselves, in which she connected with other women likewise working to build and move into their first homes. It gives me more value, she said, of working hands-on on the house. I actually put sweat and tears into this, so many hours and so many build sites. Born and raised in Champaign, Jones graduated from Centennial High School and now has worked at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center for more than 5 years as an environmental services technician. She says that her life started young after her mother died when she was only 17 years old. Her grandmother helped raise her until Jones moved out with her own three children, and since then she's been renting any place they lived. It's been all right, Jones said, especially with her grandma's ongoing support, but they've never really had a place that was big enough. Her two sons had to share a room, which just wasn't working out. They're arguing every morning when they wake up, she said. Jones got the keys to her new house on Wednesday, but she and her family still need to move in and get settled. She said that once they move in, the thing she's most looking forward to will probably be tormenting her kids. No, I'm just kidding. I look forward to cooking them their first meal in their first house. No telling what it'll be. One wants loaded Alfredo, one wants lasagna. All three kids were present for the dedication. Also present were Barbara and Terry England, who sponsored the house and got to know Jones through the program. From the moment I met you, you had so much joy and enthusiasm and grace. We're really excited that this house will be full of love and joy and laughter, Barbara England said, told Jones during the dedication ceremony. Thank you for letting us be a part of this. They gathered alongside volunteers, family, and friends for their brief ceremony, which included a ribbon cutting and some time in the new house. Alongside working on that house and others, Jones partook in financial education classes, learning how to properly manage the property now that she has it. She said that she expects being a homeowner will be much better for her financially than continuing to rent. She also said that going through the program with some other ladies has led to a great bond that will continue even after they're settled in their new homes. We're like family, Jones said. They're very sweet ladies that they're all older than me, too, so I was learning things from them as well. Jones is the 142nd house dedicated by the Habitat for Humanity of Champaign County. Sitting pretty after the primary, Budzinski, Jett, and Wilson are all apparent winners locally. Champaign County Board Republican Jeff Wilson said he's prepared for the flight ahead as he seeks to seize Illinois' 13th congressional district from U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski in November. Any fight worth fighting for, it doesn't really matter what the challenge is, Wilson said the day after the primary election, while on his way to a GOP unity breakfast Wednesday morning. We have a strong mission and purpose for Illinois District 13 and to bring the voice that's been ignored so long, for the conservative voice here in central Illinois, and take that to Washington, D.C., and then also be an authentic representative for the entire district. As of Wednesday, Mahomet Wilson held a comfortable lead of 22,099 votes in the Republican primary, more than double Joshua Lloyd's in 10,626. Meanwhile, Budzinski had more than triple the amount of votes netted by Dylan Blaha, her challenger in the Democratic primary. Their totals are 43,407 to 14,055. Budzinski said in an election night statement that she looks forward to continuing to deliver meaningful change for our communities. Over the past 3 years, I've been focused on delivering for the people of Central and Southern Illinois, she said. I've secured millions in investments for our community while fighting back against Donald Trump's attacks on our health care, our freedoms, and our democratic norms. Blaha told the News Gazette that he was honored that more than 14,000 people trusted him to be their voice in Congress. We must remember our representatives, that they work for us, and remind the corporations that control them that they need us, not the other way around, he added. We must join picket lines, rallies, city council meetings, the school board, and the local mutual aid event. Remember that in our very own district, there are at least 14,000 reasons to keep fighting. As results of some federal and state races continued to trickle out Wednesday, U.S. Senate candidate Brian Maxwell of Urbana posted a poll on X stating that he was genuinely curious about the number of voters who chose frontrunner Juliana Stratton because you liked her as a candidate, her policies, versus those who did so because they didn't want U.S. Representative Raja Krishnamurthy to win the seat. As of Wednesday evening, Maxwell had received 9,157 votes, 517 votes, about 0.8%, trailing Stratton, Krishnamurthy, U.S. Representative Robin Kelly, and Kevin Ryan in a crowded race of 10. I got into this race to speak hard truths to the Democratic Party, he told the News Gazette. That opportunity was stifled, unfortunately, when all grassroots candidates were barred from participating forums with the top three candidates. Voters once again had their options pre-selected for them. Local races have yet to be called. Champaign County Clerk Aaron Amons told the News Gazette that as of late Tuesday, about 7,700 mail-in ballots had yet to be returned to his office. How many actually do make it back is typically a considerably smaller number. Sanford Hess said that while the race for Champaign County Executive isn't over yet, he is realistic about his chances of winning, given Michelle Jett's current 10,079 to 6,793 lead. I'm really proud of the campaign that we ran, Hess said. I feel like we have a true airing of the issues, and it was a good thing for the county to have two candidates. Jett, meanwhile, said she was optimistic about the final results once all the votes are tallied and looking forward to continuing the momentum we have built the first 3 years with Executive Steve Summers. In a primary with few local contested races, Champaign County Board District 6 candidate China Figueroa Dixon finished Tuesday with a comfortable lead over fellow Democrat Ryan Musgrove, 896 to 378. Snyder Hall residents must relocate due to basement flooding. Repairs to critical systems will take a while. Around 450 University of Illinois students living on campus will be relocated to other university housing when they get back from spring break, according to a notice sent out this morning. The email delivered to Snyder Hall residents said the building experienced a catastrophic flood in the basement that severely impacted critical building systems on Sunday. While no damage was done to the dorm rooms themselves or student belongings, the email said that electricity, elevators, water heaters, card access systems, and data infrastructure were all impacted. Most students are currently off campus for spring break, so the halls will open for relocation on Saturday and continue through Monday. We understand this news is unexpected and disruptive, especially while you are away from campus, the email from University Housing reads. Our priority is to provide every resident a safe place to live so you can focus on finishing the semester successfully. The email goes on to say that even if residents are reassigned to spaces that usually have higher rates, they will not be charged more than their current Snyder rate. Additionally, any assigned to temporary spaces will have their room rates reduced by 50%. Those moving to different areas of campus can be provided curb-to-curb moving assistance by University Housing. Residents have been asked to sign up for a moving time between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. on Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, and that will be provided further information Saturday. A statement provided on the U of I Strategic Communications and Marketing site says that since Sunday's flooding, staff has assessed the damage and determined it will not be feasible to safely restore building systems by the end of the semester. There is enough existing space in University Housing to accommodate relocated students for the remainder of the semester, but most students will not be able to stay with their current roommate, the statement reads. Top of the morning, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Notes from the newsroom. Our homegrown multimedia crew has enjoyed the setup in Greenville, South Carolina, where the Illini will take on Penn in tonight's NCAA tournament opener. Beat writer Scott Ritchie, Enterprise writer Joey Wright, and photographer Rob LaCatz arrive Tuesday and will remain as long as the Illini keep winning. Find their innovative coverage in print, on radio at newsgazette.com, and on social media. Also, voice of the Illini, Brian Barnhart, will host WDWS Penny for Your Thoughts today and Friday from Greenville, where our pregame coverage starts at 6:30 p.m. today. Tonight on News Gazette Facebook is your chance to tell us what you're tuning in from Barnhart and Dion Thomas to relay on the broadcast. The engagement has been wonderful. Finally, women's college basketball beat writer Joe Vozzelli is headed to Nashville, Tennessee, where the Illini practice Friday and play Saturday. Carl and Christy partner on location for Digestive Health Services. Two local healthcare organizations have joined forces to provide a new center for digestive health services. Carl Health and Christy Clinic plan to open the Champaign Endoscopy Center at 1702 South Mattis this summer. Officials said in a joint announcement Wednesday morning. Excuse me. The building, which was previously a surgery center and later a COVID-19 testing site, is currently undergoing renovations. The center allows us to extend our services in a dedicated clinical space where highly skilled physicians can perform endoscopy procedures for patients in our local and surrounding communities, said Carrie Fox, Vice President of Clinical Operations at Carl. Our partnership with Christy Clinic has proven to support better health outcomes for community members. Officials said that the new facility will expand upon the colonoscopy and upper endoscopy services offered at Carl Foundation Hospital and the Champaign Surgery Center. The new site will have a dedicated clinical team, which will allow Carl's Digestive Health Institute at its Urbana Hospital to focus on more complex procedures. Local health officials said colonoscopies are the gold standard when it comes to screening and prevention for colorectal cancer amid rising diagnosis rates for young adults. Access to gastroenterological care is a growing challenge across the country, particularly when it comes to timely screening and preventive procedures, said Zach Sahe, Chief Operating Officer at Christy Clinic. This partnership with Carl Health, we're meeting that national challenge. Having a center exclusively dedicated to endoscopy services creates more efficient care and better access to the screenings and treatment for our patients' needs. Teacher of the Week, Michaela Morton, 6th Grade English Language Arts, Edison Middle School, Champaign. Michaela Morton is only in her second year of teaching, but the Edison Middle School 6th Grade English Language Arts teacher has known she wanted to enter the profession since she was an elementary school student teaching her brother to read. The Batavia native said she couldn't bear to leave Champaign-Urbana after attending the University of Illinois. She wound up at a school where she student taught, where she also coaches cross country. I find my work important because I know that every single day there is always going to be a student in my classroom who needs more than just a place to learn. They need stability, community, and understanding. Having the privilege of being able to provide that for so many students on a day-to-day basis reminds me that this profession truly does have the opportunity to change lives. I became a teacher because my younger brother has reading difficulties. When I was in upper elementary, early middle school, I spent countless nights at the dining room table teaching him how to read. I remember the way I felt when the pieces began to come together and it started to click for him, and I was sold. I knew it would be chasing that feeling for a very long time. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is anything revolving around SEL, social emotional learning. While I am an ELA teacher, if I can incorporate social and emotional learning into a lesson somehow, I never skip it. It is my favorite type of lesson to teach because there is so much value in teaching students how to treat themselves and others, make decisions, and manage their emotions. These are the types of lessons that truly do prepare students for life outside of school. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when I am able to watch a student's confidence grow. One thing I talk about a lot in my classroom is how important it is to trust ourselves enough to take academic risks and try new things. Since I work with sixth graders, a lot of my students have very timid when they first come to me. Being able to watch them come out of their shell and become more confident in their abilities is one of my favorite things about my job. I keep my students engaged by being just as silly as they are. I have learned that middle school students thrive in an environment where learning is fun, and being able to laugh and share common interests with one another is a really great way to do that. Something else I'm passionate about is being creative. I enjoy anything that allows me to have a creative outlet, and I'm always picking up new hobbies. I love to crochet, and I make a lot of scrapbooks. Most recently, I handmade every single one of my students a bracelet with their name on it. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was the first teacher who ever made a big impact on me was Mr. Thorns, my third grade teacher at Centennial Elementary School in Plano, Illinois. He is the first teacher that I can remember who made coming to school feel exciting. But in high school, my favorite teacher was my English teacher, Mrs. Heim, at Batavia High School. When I took her class, I had already enjoyed reading and writing, but I was beginning to slow down. She pushed me to do my best and helped me rediscover my love for the subject all over again. She taught me how to dig deeper, push myself, and recognize my own strengths. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a veterinarian. My mom is a vet tech and has worked with animals for my entire life, and I've always admired that. I've always known I wanted to work with either children or animals, but I believe that I ended up with what I ended up with is the best of both worlds, being a teacher and having two cats of my own at home. We have My Chaos Column, Records and Radio, Station Identification, Finding New Lanes Post-Disco. The disco discussion from our most recent column certainly surprised me with the sheer volume of responses on so many platforms. But before I dive into that, a quiz question. Ella Langley's song Choosing Texas has topped both the Billboard Hot 100 and the Billboard Country charts. Morgan Wallen has done it 4 times this century. Name the 2 solo singers from last century to do it twice with solo songs. I'll help you. It's not Dolly Parton or Kenny Rogers. Answers at the end of my column. 3 quick disco comments. Jane Phipps. After all these years, still my number one choice for workout music, 70s disco. Wade Luddy. I was a 100% hard rocker back in the day, except my dance music loving girlfriend was in the car. Oh, those were painful times on trips lasting more than 15 minutes. From then, I was more selective when my wife of 40 years and I were dating. She loved rock and roll, but now she listens to Motown, Broadway show tunes, and singers like Michael Bublé. I guess she has grown up, and I haven't. John Guerin, I was program director at WLS during that time, and it was a struggle to balance the playlist so we didn't let disco overwhelm us. We made it through. Garon's comment made me recall a late Sunday night talk show WLS produced in the 70s. The guests were Garon and his music director, Jim Smith, taking programming-related calls, lots of why questions from listeners. One over-the-top caller asked about a Vicki Sue Robinson disco song. The answer was a respectful explanation on the science of radio programming. What WLS did successfully, rating book after rating book, was simply delivering on listener expectations. A number of questions as to how radio played out in CU post-disco. The 80s saw the 5 CU commercial 5 FM station more clearly define their format lane. 94.5 WLRW ended in the 70s with a live Top 40 morning show, automated Top 40 from 10 a.m. until midnight, including Night Fever Disco on Fridays and Saturdays. Overnights was an eclectic album-leaning live show. The legendary Ernie Westfield hosted a Sunday night soul show. As the 80s unfolded, live personalities were added, including Stevie J. Two ownership changes later, and by the mid-80s, they were kicking butt in the market as a well-executed top 40 with high-profile personalities. 95.3 WRTL, WRBZ, WZNF. From easy listening to satellite-delivered adult contemporary, and finally classic rock as Z95 with two ownership changes. 97.5 WDWS FM WHMS. From automated beautiful music to the addition of live announcers during the day and more easy listening vocal selections. 107.1 WPGU was an established student-run album rock station in the 70s, but due to its Illini Media ownership, structure PGU was saddled with a lot of specialty programming. As the 80s unfolded, PGU was able to expand album rock programming close to 24/7. The yearly revolving door of student program directors meant annual changes in programming philosophies. Some years subtle, other years drastic. PGU was an awesome opportunity for those involved. Several student programmers from the 80s went on to major market programming responsibilities. Last but not least, my first CU radio home, 103.9 WKIO, K104, closed out the 70s as the new hot player in the market. The first Arbitron found WKIO tied with WLS for the first in Champaign County. 12-plus average quarter-hour share, live personalities 24/7, lots of promotions, constant audience interaction on the phones, and out in public had an immediate impact. K104 rode that momentum through 1983. The music, a combination of hits, album cuts, and oldies. If a new album came out, you could count on us to play a cut every hour for a couple of days. The 10 p.m. nightly featured album was a staple. Every personality had the opportunity to put their touch on the programming framework. K104's promotional machine latched onto Mike White's arrival and Lou Hansen's blossoming program. To this day, people still show me their K104 Illini buttons and pom-poms. But K104 was the last to figure out a stable format lane. 1984 brought on several challenges as the station was put on the market. Bill Ehrman and Ernie Hull's 1978 investment of $235,000 yielded a $2.6 million payday. WLRW and WPGU were very focused in their format lane. While we were too broad musically, unfortunately, we had a strong sales department, a good roster of air personalities, a somewhat smaller but very loyal audience, and a promotional machine that gave away trips to everywhere. So we were able to work our way into a new lane. By late 1987, our focus became the hot new advertising agency-driven Demo 2554. The dropping of album cuts plus more current adult pop hits and oldies we played, the more successful K104 became in the demo. I welcome your comments and topic ideas. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, March 19th, 2026. Please stay tuned for Part 2.